This week, we're talking defensive linemen, including plenty on Aaron Donald, what makes him great, how opponents attack him, and why he might be even better in 2019. Plus, the value of great run defenders, Grady Jarrett's contract situation, and as always, our ranking of the top 10 players on the D-line. It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. The position ranking series moves on. We had edge defenders last week, and now we have defensive line, basically the guys up front who are not edge players, and, well, there's a lot of really good ones in the NFL.
In part because teams have gotten more diverse with the way they employ their defensive lines. It's not just you're a three technique, you're a one technique. A lot of guys now play two technique, five shade, or five eye. Just they line up in very different positions across the board now.
And let's talk about that a little bit. We're of course, going to get to the rankings of these guys later in the show. You will not believe who number one is. But when you're looking at defensive linemen now, because I feel like in the, let's go back to like the 90s, and it was like, okay, well, if you need a nose tackle, you just need a big, fat, space-eating guy, and then, you know, if you're an odd front, you need some two-gapping types, and if you're an even front, you need some guys who get upfield. But they're, you know, like you mentioned, they're more diverse, they're used in a wider variety of ways. I guess when you're looking at great defensive linemen, what are you looking at, you know, whether it's the draft or whether you're sort of figuring out who's who might fit better in a different scheme?
Yeah, that's a great question. Most schemes are one gap penetrating schemes anymore. Now, what complicates that conversation a little bit is that a lot of the one gap schemes will have a one gap defensive tackle, your Aaron Donald type. Mm-hmm. And then they'll have a nose shade tackle, which is a guy that has kind of two gap and one gap elements depending on the call. And that guy's the one who lines up closer to the center. But even then, a lot of those guys are more one gap players and two gap players. So to answer your question in simple terms, Gary, I would say what you look for is initial quickness, initial movement, and then short area agility and quickness. How well can you play within confined spaces? Because that's so much of what the game's about. And you can talk about gap integrity and angles and hand usage and all that stuff. Very few offensive designs have an answer for a defensive lineman who penetrates. Some do, they're trap blocks and some of these misdirection plays. But for the most part, as Mike Pettine has always said to his defensive lineman, if you penetrate, if you get in the backfield, you'll never be wrong. So I would look for guys that have the physical skill set to quickly get into the backfield. And then after that, it would become who can get in the backfield powerfully. And that gets into strength and technique a little bit. That's your more of your Akeem Hicks type of guy. Mm-hmm. But anyone who's making our list, these are guys that can do all of it. Fletcher Cox, Akeem Hicks, Donald, they're all strong and quick.
Let's talk about Donald real quick. I guess, first of all, how would you game plan against him? What would you do to try and slow him down, contain him?
I think you start with the simple premise that we're not going to let him ruin the game. And I've had people around the NFL tell me, you have to understand when you're going with that premise, he's going to make three or four plays against you. He is. Yeah. And so it's a damage control situation. He might get a sack, but let's not let it be a sack fumble. He might get a tackle for loss, but let's not have that create a second and 17. Let's have it create a first or a second and 12. Something, you know, it's just damage control. He is that good of a player. And very few guys. Von Miller is probably like that. Mm-hmm. J.J. Watt is like that. Khalil Mack is like that, where you game plan and say, we're going to not let them ruin the game, rather than we're going to take him out of the game, which is what you can do to a lot of, if you want, you can take almost any NFL player out of the game. Now, you're going to leave yourself vulnerable in other spots. Donald is one guy that you are not going to take out of the game. So you minimize the damage, and then it's a question of how do we do it? And one thing that teams were doing more last year, because it's, we've talked before, Gary, it's hard to double team a defensive tackle. You can slide your protection his way, but it's hard to truly double team. Like, you don't chip block him like you do a defensive end. You can't do that. You can't leave a tight end in the block because these guys are playing inside. So that's why I've been saying it's more important to have a good guard than a good tackle in today's pass blocking NFL, because you can't help against a defensive tackle. You can't help a guard as much. But one thing teams were doing was leaving their running back in and just having him be a second line of defense against these guys. I don't like that approach so much, because I think that crowds your backfield too much. It creates almost like your own pressure on the quarterback, instead of like the Cardinals did it last year. And instead of Aaron Donald getting home, it was basically David Johnson getting in Josh Rosen's way when he's trying to throw.
Yeah, I was going to say, if the Cardinals did it last year, maybe it's you know, not a great idea.
But, you know, it might be the best of a bunch of bad ideas. I mean, yeah. That's the problem with a guy like Aaron Donald is, like, hey, let me ask you, what would you do then if we both agree, hey, we don't like leaving the running back in? Okay, well, then what are we going to do, assuming that we have an average guard and maybe a slightly above average center or tackle?
I feel like teams used to be able to catch him going upfield a little too much at times. And I mean, I don't know. I guess you can't really discourage him from getting upfield. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's a great point. He does penetrate himself out of the play at times. And the Rams would probably tell you, yeah, it's the cost of doing business with Aaron Donald. We'll live with that.
Yeah.
The Rams run defense a couple years ago was ranked, I think, 31st in the league in terms of yards per carry. And that was part of it. Donald has had a reputation at times in his career as not always being the most gap sound defender, not always being the most schematically disciplined defender. And some guys, really, when you have a guy as talented as him, usually you say, okay, we'll let you do it that way, but now we need to have a smart linebacker behind you, someone who can read off of that and adjust his assignments if you're going to change your gap assignments. The Rams have not had those kind of linebackers, though. They're not like the Texans that have those guys that can play off of J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
They've had mostly average linebackers, so Donald can be a little bit, he's not a liability in run defense, but he can be, by his highest of standards, he can be an erratic run defender, so I'm with you on that. I've also learned that you're not allowed to even acknowledge that on Twitter, because if Aaron Donald's anything less than a god of football, you don't know what you're doing. But I thought it was strange that he was almost a unanimous defensive player of the year 2 years ago and a defensive tackle on a defense that ranked almost last against the run. That, I bet you, has never happened before.
I was going to say, my bigger problem, and I didn't have a big problem with him on getting defensive player of the year. I can't even remember if I voted for him or not, but he had missed basically two games that year. That was my bigger issue.
Other guys had missed games that year as well, but I that factored into my thinking when I voted for defensive player of the year is that, yeah, he wasn't in two games isn't everything, but that's when you're talking about splitting the difference between the top two or three guys in the league. It can be a big decision-making factor.
Yeah. Yeah. And you think they can give Donald a little more help schematically going forward?
I think that's unequivocally, absolutely, irrefutably true is what was so astounding about Aaron Donald. So it was funny because Twitter jumped all over me for saying that, you know, just even asking, is it weird that he's defensive player of the year on a bad run defense? And I was only asking the question. That was bad. Then when you acknowledge that, hey, Aaron Donald's so great, he puts up these huge numbers and he doesn't really get a lot of help from the scheme, that as well is bad. So Aaron Donald's almost in that Russell Wilson territory. We're just not allowed to say anything about him on Twitter because you're a hater, unless you want to just call him the Lord and Savior of the NFL. The Rams do not give him much help schematically, not by the stand, not the way the Texans do for Watt or the Eagles, even for Fletcher Cox. They just do not. And remember, the Eagles have a lot of good players around Fletcher Cox.
Yeah.
The Rams do not. The Rams don't have any other pass rusher around Donald. Michael Brockers is a very good player, but he's not a pass rushing threat. And Ndamukong Suh last year was a good player, not an every down pass rushing threat. Dante Fowler maybe changes that this year. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But Donald is the guy. And they don't do a lot of five down fronts in Los Angeles. It's a lot of straight four down fronts. Those fronts at times can be predictable based on the situation. Wade Phillips likes to play an under front, meaning his three technique is away from the tight end. Now, an under front, that in and of itself can be a way to help your three tech, because if he's away from the tight end, he's harder to double team, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean he's impossible to double team. And with no other weapons around Donald, the protection always finds its way to him, which is the other thing that stands out to me watching the Rams on film, is they don't do a lot of designer pass rush concepts. They don't do a lot of stunts and twists and games and that. It's for given the way they play defense, you'd think they would do more of that, and they don't do a whole lot. And that's really bizarre because they know at all times where the protection's going. It's going to Aaron Donald. Any team that knows where the protection's going, they ought to be able to exploit that schematically. And my guess, Gary, is that the Rams are going to look into doing a lot more of that in 2019, because why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you do everything in your power to maximize the strength that you have with Aaron Donald, understanding that the trickle-down effect of that is going to make the jobs of everyone else around him easier as well?
Well, let's change gears from the 2018 NFC champions to the 2019 NFC champions, the Detroit Lions. Damon Harrison in particular, I guess the main question here is, why does run defense matter? And less, why does it matter, but why should we worry about it in a league that is as pass-happy as the NFL is right now? And the second part of that question is, why is Damon Harrison so good as a run defender?
Well, let's do the Damon Harrison one first, because that's an easy one. He has great technique, for one. He plays mm-hmm. low to the ground naturally, and he moves east and west extremely well, lateral movement, and he has the strength to disengage from blocks off of lateral movement. So essentially, he can be a two-gap defender, and let's understand what we mean by that as well. Because I think when you say two gaps, you think, all right, Gilbert Brown for the Packers, yeah. Big Gilbert Brown, the gravedigger. He was so big and wide, he just took up two gaps. Well, Gilbert Brown was a very wide man, but nobody's wide enough to take up the size of two gaps. Three human beings is what comprises the space of two gaps. So really, when you're two-gapping, what you do is you put yourself in one gap, and then you get your strong hands on your blocker, and you move him into the other gap, and you hold ground that way. As opposed to trying to get through your gap, you stand in your gap and then clog the gap next to you with the guy who's trying to block you. That's how you two-gap. Damon Harrison more than has the strength to do that, but Gary, I'm saying he is so athletically dynamic for his body type that he can effectively two-gap without having to put the blocker in the other gap. He yeah. can just be that destructive and discombobulate two different gaps off of his movement, not just off of his size.
He's really been a fascinating guy to watch the last couple of years here, and there's been absolutely no fall off. He's been so consistent. He was a guy, you'll find out if he made our top 10 when we unveil the rankings a little bit. I was going to make that joke about Aaron Donald, but Aaron Donald did make the top 10. But my question, Andy, back to the more global matter here, because look, Damon Harrison, you know, wants another contract. He might have one more contract in him here in the NFL. Is there a good reason to put an emphasis on a player like Harrison? I guess my argument, and it goes back to, this didn't really work out last season, but when the Bucs drafted Vita Vea to put alongside yeah. Gerald McCoy, and is there something to be said for, okay, well, now if you're Gerald McCoy, you have this guy to sort of upgrade the run stop factor around you, and now you can just worry about getting upfield and making plays.
Yeah, I think there is some value to that, because when you hear about run defense, they talk about building a wall. Take away the cutback lane by either penetrating or holding your ground there. And that's what a guy like Vita Vea can do. And if you build a wall, then the ball's not cutting back to that side of the field behind you, and everyone else can play faster because the ball's stuck to one side of the field. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some value to that. Your broader question, though, how much does this really matter? That's a good one to evaluate, because when I did that Aaron Donald tweet, one of the guys who tweeted, and I'm talking about the first one now, where yeah. it was, hey, should a guy on a bad run defense as a defensive tackle, where you're the primary run defender usually, should he win Defensive Player of the Year? Evan Silva of NBC Sports, he's going on and doing his own thing now. He left NBC, starting mm-hmm. his own site. But he tweeted back a very simple tweet. Silva's a good tweeter. He's a thoughtful guy. He doesn't do the garbage, snarky bullcrap that so many people fall into. He said, yeah, Wade Phillips doesn't care about run defense. And I think Evan Silva's probably right. And not the sense that Wade Phillips says, yeah, let's just let them do whatever they want. But if you're getting beat on the ground, the offense has to sustain a lot against you. A lot of things have to continue to go right. If you're gaining 5 yards a run, you've still got to do that 12 times in a row just to move the ball 60 yards downfield and get into scoring position. So you could argue that run defense, really the game's about explosive plays. And run defense, as long as you're not getting gouged for explosive plays, you could argue that it's not as important in today's NFL given the way the ball's moved offensively now. What would you, I mean, I don't know. It feels almost heretical saying that, though, doesn't it?
It does. It's a changing of way of thinking. I would make the argument, and this is more of a devil's advocate sort of argument, because I do agree that I think the run game has taken a rightful back seat in a big way. But in a league where the teams are so evenly matched and so many games come down to maybe three or four plays, especially once you get to the postseason, I don't know. I guess it just helps to be sort of, have everything cinched up in every aspect of the game. And, I even think back to the end of the Super Bowl last year. Rams couldn't get off the field against the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots just ran it down their throats at the end. Now, the Patriots, obviously, they did not ride a Sony Michel to the Super Bowl, but that was part of their identity.
No question about it. And the Patriots, not only did they put the Super Bowl away with their two back runs or their runs out of two tight end sets. I remember Burkhead had a big run there out of that. That was two backs and two tight ends, actually. But they got to the Super Bowl doing that stuff. They were putting old school formations and old school body types, starting with fullback James Devlin. They were putting those guys on the field, and defenses didn't have an answer because they're not used to seeing that, because they're so used to playing against these three receiver sets. The difference between a run play against a three receiver set and where there's only one guy in the backfield inherently versus a run play with a two back set, like with a fullback, it's huge, because that fullback creates two gaps when he moves. There's a gap on his left and a gap on his right. He's a traveling gap creator, which changes all of your run defense rules. So it's, if you can, it'll be interesting to see if more teams approach this way to play this year, Gary, because the Patriots really hurt people with it last year on the simple reason that defenses and defensive linemen, back to our subject at hand, they're not accustomed to dealing with it anymore.
And by the way, just to finish the Evan Silva plug, the new site for him will be establishtherun.com, which I mentioned.
Really?
I mentioned because we like Evan, and I mentioned it because it's appropriate for this conversation. But I think it gets a little bit silly when you get into the, first and foremost, we have to stop the run type of thing. But I think it is nice to have a Damon Harrison or I guess that would have been the Bucs thinking with Vita Vea. Just have a guy who can be such a difference maker in the run game, and then you can kind of say to everyone else, well, just get upfield. Just do your thing.
Yeah. Well, and understand the Patriots are the only team in the NFL that consistently two gaps on every down anymore. I thought the Lions, you could say, I think they espouse to be that way. They had the same type of defensive alignment as the Patriots, but the Patriots commit to it more. They've got big linebackers thumping old school players. They want to make you mount drives offensively because they believe that over the course of 12 plays on a long drive, something, you're going to get yourself off schedule. You'll have a false start. You'll have someone drop a pass on a second down, put you in third and long. Someone misses an assignment. You know, something's going to go wrong for you over the course of 12 plays, and then you're behind the chains, and that's how we're going to do it. So that's their thinking behind it. And I think there's some validity to that overall approach. But to kind of bring it full circle, the other thing we're hearing about, Gary, is like the Panthers this year. It's a big story. Well, the Panthers are going to a 3-4 defense now. They're not doing – nobody's playing a 3-4 defense in the NFL, really, other than New England. A lot of the – maybe Pittsburgh to some degree. A lot of teams will line up in 3-4 structures in order to create one-on-one blocking assignments. When you put a defensive tackle right over the center – that center is removed from the equation. He has to block the defensive tackle who's right in front of him. And because of that, you create a lot more one-on-one matchups for guys elsewhere. More teams are doing that with their fronts. The Falcons last year did a ton of 3-4 fronts just to get one-on-one blocking for their guys. You will see more of that around the NFL, but that's about creating penetration again. That's not about clogging gaps the way it was 20 years ago when we saw those fronts.
All right. Let's move it along before we get to the position rankings. Just a quick note. We only have two of the position ranking shows left, Andy. We go to the defensive backfield. We have safeties next week. We have cornerbacks for the finale. If you missed any other shows, you can go back in the feed and find them. We're not going to do them for you. But, yeah. And then we have a mailbag show. Unless you want to do punters and kickers.
We have to do our all-average team at some point.
All average team.
What was the other one?
All second chance team. Some of those came in. So if you have those, maybe we'll combine them into one show, or maybe we will do a mailbag show and then a separate sort of all average team, all second chance team, potpourri type of show. Because I feel like at some point I think the people have demanded, and if we are, if nothing else, men of the people, but the people have demanded a split of the offensive line rankings into guards, centers, and tackles.
Have they really?
Yeah, everyone's all upset that certain guys got snubbed.
Now, can I tell my snub story? You said I have to
hold
it. I don't see why I have to hold it.
Hold it for the mailbag. All right, tell it. Tell it.
Our Lane Johnson snub. Lane Johnson, we ought to snub him every year because we get so much more attention when we don't vote Lane Johnson top 10.
We're going to do like top 10 lanes in the NFL and we're not going to put him in there.
We'd have to include last name so we could, like, Jeremy Lane, who I don't know if he's still in the league now or not, the slot corner, but top 10 lanes. No, Chris Long got on. I was at the ESPYs this week and Chris Long got on me for not including Lane Johnson, but he was genuinely interested why we didn't. And he made it clear he disagreed with it, but he actually wanted to converse about it, which was refreshing. And I learned a lot. He's a smart guy.
Yeah. I mean, look, Lane Johnson could have been as high as the number 3 tackle on our list. There were only 4 tackles who made our list. He could have been as high as 3. He ended up being, I'm pulling up right now, he ended up being tied for 6th. The guys in front of him were Bakhtiari, Tyron Smith, who I don't think you'd put Lane Johnson in front of either of those guys. And then it becomes a conversation. Then it's Mitchell Schwartz, it's Trent Williams, and it's Andrew Whitworth, and then Lane Johnson after that, which when you say he's 6th, that's not so bad.
No, but I think to be fair to Lane Johnson, who, and I don't want him coming out looking like he's less than an outstanding player just because we're having to have this conversation.
Yeah.
There are legitimate arguments across the league that he's better than each of those guys in certain moments. If somebody wanted to make the case Lane Johnson's better than Tyron Smith, they'd have evidence to submit to that. There'd be evidence for Tyron Smith's side as well, but these are not no-brainer conversations. And Lane Johnson's a very talented. I told Chris Long the reason I don't know if I voted him top 10 or not, but he didn't come out top 10 in our rankings as a group. And if he plays to his best ability at all times, like he did against J.J. Watt last year in week 16, then he's top 3. But he's not consistent with his hands. And so then it's a discussion of what makes a good lineman. Is it consistency from snap to snap, or is it what you can do with the guy? Is it high? You know, are we going off of their ceiling, or are we going off of their floor? Are we going off of something in the middle? And that's to each his own, which is why these conversations exist.
Yeah. But I think more than anything else, I just want to point out, we think Lane Johnson is really good.
No question.
It was all offensive linemen in that list, and there's only 10 of them. That's not very many. That's a very tough list to crack. He very easily could have cracked it. I think he ended up like 12th overall or something like that. But
sixth as an overall tackle does feel a little low to me.
Yeah. Trent Williams was the wild card, because Trent Williams, you don't know if he's healthy. You don't know what he's going to be going forward.
Correct. He's a little bit, and I think Tyron Smith, to a lesser degree, it has trended towards wild card status a little bit. He's so gifted, though, and maybe I'm stretching on that.
And
these are all good players. These are hard conversations. These are all guys that are getting, whoever's up for the contract next, and most of these guys are signed, but theoretically, whoever's up, they're going to become the highest paid tackle in the league. We're talking about the one percenters.
And we should mention just one more thing before we get to the rankings. Andy was at the ESPYs to accept our award for best position rankings podcast series.
Yeah, what were the odds of that? You know, I went to the ESPYs. I've never been before, and I had other reasons to go to LA. So I okay, let's do this. It was a lot of fun, but I never figured out where I was supposed to go for. I didn't do the red carpet. I didn't want to do red carpet stuff. Like I didn't want to watch the guys walk down the carpet.
Yeah.
I amazingly was not invited to the red carpet again this year. So I didn't hustle to the red carpet, but by the time I got there, the red carpet had cleared out. I never figured out where to go. So I had a credential and I just kept kind of showing it to any person I came by, anyone at a door that I wanted to walk through. I showed it and I didn't know where I was going or why I was walking through the door. And they just kept saying yes. So I just kind of wandered my way. And before I knew it, I was all the way back in there. I saw my buddy Kenny Moore in there as well in the hot dog line.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm glad Kenny Moore is getting a hot dog.
I asked him because we did that Kenny Moore story a week ago. And I said, when we sat down in Indianapolis, did you know you were getting the big contract? And Kenny Moore said, no, I honestly did not. And I kind of pumped my chest out and said, well, I knew. I knew you were. And I actually did. And he said, oh, I think you'd mentioned that already. And I felt like oh, yeah, bro, that's embarrassing.
Yeah. I didn't know.
I already gone to that well.
Just reminding him of, like, I don't know. That'd be like reminding him of the fact that you knew about his surprise party before his surprise party.
Yeah, well, and it's a false headline. I knew that they wanted to give him a long-term contract, which is a very far cry from, you know, that's Adam Schefter would have known the details of the contract and every little nuanced clause in it.
Yeah.
So I was probably overplaying what I said. And for some reason, I felt like I didn't get away with it when I did it a second time. Like, he knew that about me now.
Oh, man. Well, let's get to the position rankings. We'll, I don't know, maybe we'll have more on the ESPYs next week. But we have Ryan Taylor as our third voter this week. Ryan Taylor, who's really a big-time motor here during the position ranking series.
Yeah, Ryan Taylor does have a motor. Because what happens, he does a lot of projects for me, and I send him these hey, need your position rankings, and I'll do that late Wednesday night sometimes. And that's not a small thing to hand over to him.
Well, let's unveil it. Andy's favorite part, the others receiving votes. We had 25 guys receive votes. These are the 15 who didn't make the top 10 in order from fewest votes to most. Quinnen Williams, Malik Jackson, Michael Pierce, Jonathan Allen, Eddie Goldman, Javon Hargrove, Gerald McCoy, Stephon Tuitt, Brandon Williams, Sheldon Richardson, Mike Daniels, Kawan Short, Leonard Williams, Jerron Reed, and Damon Harrison. Just misses the cut.
Quinnen Williams.
Quinnen Williams.
How many tackles does he have?
Look to the future, Andy. Look to the future. Let's talk about it in January. You have. Uh-huh. I wish this was a video podcast. You have a pretty good look on your face right now.
So when Chris Long came, yeah, I get annoyed at this part. When Chris Long came up to me griping about Lane Johnson, I should have said to him, but no, Chris, you don't understand. This is a futures podcast, and you see, he sucks this year.
Well, what if
he gives up 4 sacks in week 7? I don't want to spoil it for you, but we can see all these things. We can see clearly into a crystal ball.
What if he does, Andy? What if he does?
Mm-hmm.
All right, number 10, Jarrell Casey, and then we had a tie for number 8 between DeForest Buckner and Kenny Clark. And I feel like Buckner and Clark are nice guys to pair here because I feel like these are two Andy Benoit specials right here.
Well, there's a lot of raw talent here. These guys play long. DeForest Buckner is long because he's 6'8 and he has long arms. Mm-hmm. Kenny Clark does not look like a long-bodied guy, and he's not a long-bodied guy, but he is sinewy and supple and pliable. He's just a fluid athlete with big, strong hands. So it starts with strong hands, and then he explodes into fluidity, and he gets to places on the field within the tackle box. Really, it's the guard center box for him. He gets to places that you don't expect any defensive tackle to get to. He has a chance. Kenny Clark, this will be a big year for him. He was already great last year, but he has a chance to be in top 3 or 4 territory by this time next year.
Number 7, Cam Hayward. Number 6, Geno Atkins. Number 5, Grady Jarrett. And I just want to ask you about Jarrett real quick, Andy. if he is, if 2019 is his last year in Atlanta, what are they going to do for a pass rush with this defense? They don't really have anything going outside of him right now.
They need Tack McKinley needs to step up for Atlanta, and he's progressing. He was their first round pick a few years ago. He's entering his third season now. They need him to become the guy in that defensive line, and they like him more outside. I think he's a good defensive tackle rusher as well, a good inside pass rusher. But if he doesn't, then this is a very average pass rush, because Vic Beasley's kind of, he's proven to be a one-trick pony. And I thought Grady Jarrett last year, Gary, I think he's their best defensive lineman overall still, but I didn't think he was as disruptive last year as he normally is, which I wonder if that's part of the reason he's on a franchise tag now.
Yeah, it's just a little bit disappointing because and not only has he been really good over his career so far, and he was such a nice find for them, and I believe it was the fifth round, but it was a nice little narrative story leading up to them. Robert Klemko had done that piece on Jarrett and his draft weekend, and the family house had actually burned down during the draft. And
I don't know if I caught that piece actually.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'll throw it in the episode description if you want to read it and sort of relive 2016, 2015.
Grady Jarrett came into the NFL in 2015 as a fifth round pick.
Yeah,
and his family, because I remember I told you a few. I think it was a couple years ago now, I was emailing with Grady Jarrett's brother back and forth during the offseason watching Canadian football film, which I'd never watched before. He said, but I learned, do you remember who his brother is?
Yeah. Yeah. I know Justin Tuggle, son of.
Which means that Grady Jarrett is Jesse Tuggle's
son. Yeah.
Yeah. I did not know that. Jesse Tuggle was a hard hitting player.
He
I
was.
Remember that part as a kid.
He was, and that was a Jesse Tuggle announcement. Jesse Tuggle announced that pick for the Falcons.
How did I not notice any of that?
I don't know how you missed all
this. I'll
tell
you why, because I watched the draft on mute because I'm writing the instant reaction for MMQB, so I'm only seeing the names. I'm not listening to it as much. I can't believe I don't remember that, though.
2015 was a great year. But yeah, they gave Tuggle the card, and he didn't know who the pick was until he... until he read it. So,
are you kidding? I can't believe I didn't. That's like one of the great draft moments.
It was really nice.
And I'm embarrassed. I didn't know that.
You can read Klemko's piece. Klemko did a really nice piece on it back in almost more than 4 years ago at this point. That's kind of terrifying. Number four.
I'm gonna watch this video. I found it here. I'm gonna watch a video later.
Okay.
Sorry. What's our countdown? Number.
We're on number four. Jarrett was five. Number four is Chris Jones. I do want to ask you, Chris Jones in a Steve Spagnuolo defense. What do we make of that?
Probably business as usual. Chris Jones. He's one of the does everything guys. He is strong and quick. That's why he had so many sacks last year. Disruptive. He's a little bit inconsistent, as is every Chiefs run defender of the last 10 years, it feels like. But he's very talented. I understand why he's on this list as high. And I think I had him voted number four, if I recall.
Yeah, we had the order was a little bit different, but we all had the same top fours.
Okay. So very good. Top three strong here.
Yeah.
I bet people can guess it.
Number three, Akeem Hicks. I thought the top two were super obvious, and then three and four, order them how you want. But
yep.
Number three, Akeem Hicks, and number two, Fletcher Cox.
I like it. I like both of them. Akeem Hicks, I went and visited with him a few weeks ago. We sat at Hallis Hall, which is a beautiful place when it's nice in springtime anyway. He's one of my favorite players in the NFL, and he has been for a while. Were we podcasting together when he got traded? I feel like that was one of our earlier podcasts. Maybe I'm mistaken. When the Saints traded him to the Patriots?
Yeah. We discussed that on a podcast.
Because I thought when that happened, I thought Akeem Hicks is going to become a household name. And he played very well. The Saints were trying to make him a defensive end, which was wrong. Mm-hmm. I'll just be polite about it. It's not even close. And the Patriots said, no, you're more of an interior defensive lineman. You're an end, but you're not a wide end. You're not off the edge. You're not an edge guy. And they played him in his right position. He played well. He didn't play as much as I thought he would for them. And then after the season, Belichick called him and said, we'd love to resign you, but we're going to be good, and we're going to be here with or without you. It's a matter of whether you just want to come along. And Akeem Hicks, he wouldn't tell me quite what he thought of that because he wants to leave that open to – he doesn't want us to think only from his point of view. Mm-hmm. That could mean a number of things, but Belichick's words were, we're doing this with or without you. We'd love to have you, but, you know, we don't need you, basically was the sentiment. And so Akeem Hicks went to the Bears with Ryan Pace, their GM, who he knew from New Orleans, who I'm guessing Ryan Pace was not part of the original trade or the decision to play Akeem Hicks at the wrong position back in the Saints days.
There you go. It's a nice little backstory there, which brings us to, I guess, doesn't really bring us there, but we have arrived there. Number one is Aaron Donald. 3 first place votes out of 3 voters. Can you believe it?
I can believe it. I thought next to Gary Grambling, I think Ryan Russillo is the best podcaster out there. And on the Ryan Russillo podcast a few weeks ago, he asked Kevin Clark and myself, what's the biggest gap between the number one player at his position and the number two player at his position? And it was the only time that Russillo's ever asked me anything that I didn't think was a brilliant, I have to think about this a little bit type of question. Mm-hmm. I thought it was an Aaron Donald, no brainer, on to the next thing. And I think Kevin Clark felt the same way.
Yeah, this is a pretty significant gap, and I think Fletcher Cox is a legitimate defensive player of the year candidate, but just not that.
Yeah,
close
he's
to Aaron
very
Donald.
Good, and Cox, for example, let's use him as an example. They'll move him around a little bit in Philadelphia in some of their sub package fronts. So kind of back to that Aaron Donald conversation, mm-hmm. and when we say that Donald doesn't, you know, we're not saying Donald plays 3 technique every snap and that's all he ever does. Of course not. He does move around. When you talk about moving a defensive lineman, though, we're talking about what they do in nickel pass rush situations, nickel or dime. We're not talking about does he play on paper? Is he a defensive end if they're in what we believe to be a 3-4 structure? That stuff is important, but not to this. That's not what makes these guys $100 million assets. It's what they do in sub packages to help them. Mm-hmm. And the Eagles will put Cox at a nose tackle position. In obvious passing situations, line them up directly over the center. The Bengals do that with Geno Atkins a lot, especially a few years ago, by the way. And they will put him at defensive end at times, and they run a lot of stunts and twists off of this stuff. I think the Eagles do a really nice job scheming around Fletcher Cox.
Let's get to the lightning-ish round, Andy. And there might be some news that spoils this question between our taping and the publishing of this episode. But first question is, who would you rather sign long-term, Grady Jarrett or Jadeveon Clowney?
It's a tough one. That's a really tough one because Jarrett has the franchise tag, and I wonder if that's because he was a little bit quieter last year. I didn't think he was bad, but I thought he was a little bit quieter. Clowney has the franchise tag. I'm sure it's because he's been injury prone. And I know some people in the Texans love him from a football character standpoint, love him, and mm-hmm. say he's one of the smartest guys they've dealt with football-wise, and that's why he does so many things for them. I would imagine from what I've heard that not everybody in the organization feels that same way about Clowney. So you have a mixed review about Jadeveon Clowney. The talent's there. He can do a lot of things. So he's obviously has some football IQ. But look how long we've been talking about this for a lightning-ish round. These aren't easy decisions. I don't know who I'd rather sign long. Do you have an answer? What's your answer to this? Maybe I'll just piggyback.
I was going to say I'll lean Jarrett. One to be a counterculture jerk, but also
the counterculture jerk.
I'm the counterculture jerk. I wonder about how Clowney will age. He's been healthy lately. He had injury problems early in his career, and I don't know when that explosiveness goes away a little bit. Is he going to age poorly?
Yeah, because he's not a technically sound, he's not a technically proficient player. That's not what he hangs his hat on. He hangs his hat on violent explosiveness, like you're saying. Both of these guys are 26 years old. I would go with Jared. Really, though, when we're talking about signing him long-term, you're talking about committing for three years. I mean, yep. So are we worried about them aging at that point? Clowney seems like he'd be likelier to age early. He'd be more likely than Jared to start aging early.
Well, let's say we were going to give him the special 8-year contract and fully guaranteed 8 years. So I'll go Jarrett.
All right. And I would go Jarrett as well. And then I'd go look for a new job because I would have been fired for that.
those eight-year deals you're handing out here. Most valuable 49ers defensive lineman in 2019, DeForest Buckner, Dee Ford, or Nick Bosa?
The fact that we have this question is why I think the Niners will be a breakout team, because that's a hard one to answer.
Yep.
Buckner's the safest bet, but I thought Buckner would have taken a bigger step last year than he did. And he plays so much. He doesn't come off the field. And maybe he's a guy that would be better rotating than he would be playing 1,000 snaps a year. And that's not really a slight at him either. That just speaks to the nature of football in today's NFL and how the game works, especially with all these hurry-up offenses that you get now. You have to rotate a defensive line most of the time. Aaron Donald doesn't come out very much, though. Mm-hmm. Fletcher Cox plays quite a bit. So, but those guys aren't playing as much as Buckner. So I would say DeForest Buckner is the answer, assuming that they can narrow the definition of his role a little bit, give him a more clearly defined role, fewer snaps here and there.
And finally,
No.
I got to answer. I was going to say Buckner. I do kind of want to troll you and say Nick Bosa, though, because I know how much you love it when we tout rookies on these shows before they played a snap.
I don't mind. Look, this, well, okay, but here's the difference, Gary. This was a projecting question. This was who's going to be the more valuable player, not who's a top 10 right now.
They're always
what you're doing when you put Quinnen Williams there. Quinnen Williams, top 10. He's not even under contract. Is he? I only Quinnen, technically, Quinnen Williams really isn't even in the NFL. He couldn't play today if he had to. He'd have to sign his papers first.
He signed. Everyone signed now, right?
I thought Quinnen would. No, I think that. Those,
oh, no,
Quinnen
no
Williams,
you're right.
Quinnen, Bosa as well is not signed either.
That's right. Quinnen Williams is still among those who haven't. You're right. You're right. He's not a football player at the moment. final question. Breakout player or underappreciated star for the upcoming season?
I'm going to give it to, and we owe him now because there's a typo on our outline, and you Ron Burgundy'd this by saying Javon Hargrave for the Steelers, who we talked about him a lot.
Yep.
I think he's a great player. I think he is. If someone said you had to put him on your top 10, I wouldn't put up much of a fight. Very light feet. One thing that the Steelers do with Hargrave that I don't think anybody else does with their nose tackle in the NFL, they design stunts and twists for him where he's the looper. So he's not the big body that's occupying blockers and creating a lane for someone else. He's the guy that loops around. And the Steelers, they're interesting because they will run those stunts and twists on rundowns, first down, second down. They don't do it as a pass rushing tactic. They do it as a run stopping tactic. Kind of, it's called overlapping when your defensive tackle crosses behind a fellow defensive tackle. Javon Hargrave is outstanding at doing that. And that's a big part of their scheme.
That was really good. I'm glad you had it queued up, and I'm glad I got called out for not being able to spell things right or pronounce things correctly. So.
Well, if I ever pitched in with planning any of these podcasts, you know, maybe we'd catch. I mean, I think that's the first typo we've had all year, anyway, on this list. It's certainly the first one that got Ron Burgundy'd. So you do a tremendous job, and I will fully admit that you do not get the support that you deserve from your co-host. I could carry at least an ounce of the load once in a while.
I did on the lightning round spell it DeForest Bucker.
Well, let me see. But I did say it.
You correctly did.
All right. So we've had some typos. That's all right. It doesn't matter if you have a typo. What matters is how it comes out in the end.
Yeah. I'm going to say I'm not basing this on his underwhelming rookie year, but I loved him so, so much coming out of Sam Houston State. I'm going with PJ Hall as my breakout guy and just crossing
the
my
Raiders?
Fingers that will happen. Yep.
He came on strong in the second half of last season.
Yeah. Yeah, but not strong enough to really tout him as a breakout. I loved him at Sam Houston State. I really, when he didn't get invited to the combine, I just kind of said, oh, well, maybe I just had it wrong. But yeah, he ended up going high in the draft, and I'm still holding out plenty of hope.
That's a good one. That's a good one to hold out. That's a smart pick. I like that. It's a good one to hold out hope for. And the Raiders, they're counting a lot on their defensive tackles because Maurice Hurst, their fifth-round pick last year, mm-hmm. They're thinking those are going to be their guys, of course. They took Hall in the second round, and I think they feel Hurst is every bit as good as Hall. Hurst had, what was it, a heart issue that he came in with?
Yeah.
Yeah. But both those guys got better over the course of last season. They have a long ways to go, though, too. That whole Raider defense has a long ways to go.
Well, that's we don't have a long ways to go, Andy. We got two position ranking series shows to go. Safeties next week, cornerbacks in 2 weeks. Send those questions for the mailbag show. Talkback@themmqb.com. Send your all average team nominations or a full team if you want, or send your all second act team. Some people are sending full teams, and that's just great. Or you can just send single nominations. We like both of those. But that's
and the all second act team. To be clear, that's guys who were drafted by one or came into the league with one team, were okay, but then they got good when they joined a new team.
Yeah, preferably. I think you could say, maybe a regime change or something like that. That unlock. I think it's a guy who everyone gave up on, and then I guess we should define this more firmly. But I think it's a guy everyone gave up on, and then became a star.
So, which would to me that would suggest in. Almost 95% of these guys are going to be guys that change teams in, even though I know there could be a regime change.
Okay.
I'd say guys that did the second team, because you never know. It might have been just something as simple as a uniform, Scary, just wearing a different color. Could have done it for some of these. We won't know till we break them all down as one unit.
There you go. Well, send those in, and all right, go with Andy's team. Or go with Andy's things, preferably that they change teams, but I'm not going to say you have to.
Well,
I'd say preferable.
The question is, what do we do if someone submits and the guy gets through? If it's Patrick Chung, who was on the Patriots, went to the Eagles, was nothing there, went back to the Patriots, and was a much better player than the first time he was with the Patriots. Is he eligible for the team as a second-time Patriot, or how would that work? And I don't know. Let's leave that up. I don't know, unless you want to implement a rule here.
No. I'll go back and look at who the Patriots coach was, if they had the same guy there. Both those.
Okay.
Times.
Start with that. See if the head coach was the same.
Yeah. All right. Basically, send those in. Talkback@themmq.com. You can also send them on Twitter or Facebook. But, who doesn't like email? Everyone likes email. That'll do it for now. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. Thank you to producer Brandon Nix for making this sound good and fit for human consumption. To get all of our shows, Albert, Jenny, and Connor come back soon. We have bad football movies probably coming up soon. We skipped a week, but that's okay. We had the Rudy one. That was a big one. That felt like a season finale type of moment. But get them all by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.